Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free, at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So, whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
There's no doubt about it that he did have a phone which got taken out of the bathroom and then brought another phone into the bathroom and left it there overnight because God knows why. I'm pretty sure he'll be able to regain the title.
But that's a question. Are you able to regain the title?
They managed to take like 15 events and turn it into 2, just like wiping out several million dollars from their prize fund. That's the way I see it.
That's how stock goes up. You cut expenses.
I've also put myself in this position that it's like if I play now they're going to.
It's okay. It's okay.
Hikaru's going to make another video.
That's okay. We'll respond to it. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to another C-Squared podcast episode. Since the last time we chatted, Fabi, quite a lot of things have happened in the world of chess. Obviously, you've played some chess. There's been some drama as well. It seems like in the chess world, we can never escape it, and we'll be chatting about that as well. Perhaps one of the first of its kind, as we will see in just a few minutes. That's an episode that we will definitely cover. Title Tuesday, some changes in that one as well. You said that you will not talk about it ever in the future or your discussion
with Hikaru. I said I was kind of done with it. But
at least until the Siegfried Cup is over, but definitely we will cover what happened in relation to Title Tuesday as well. There's a few newcomers in the top 10. One in particular I do want to talk about as well. And at the end of it, I also want to take your Grand Prix predictions, or Grand Swiss, or however you want to call it, Grand Swiss predictions. But
It's just called the Grand Swiss.
Grand Swiss.
I don't think we can call it anything else.
Yes, Grand Swiss. Let's keep it at Grand Swiss. But of course, let's start with the Siegfried Cup. You needed a big result in it to qualify for the top 4, and you got it. You tied for first. Didn't go your way in the tiebreaks. It was Wesley So that won the event, but still you achieved one of the big goals of the event, and that was to qualify to the top 4 in Brazil, the grand finals that is going to happen in about a month from now. So good result, at least from the outside perspective. How do you feel about your performance at the Siegfried Cup?
It was overall good. You know, when I started the St. Louis series of tournaments, the St. Louis Rapid and Blitz, followed by the Siegfried Cup, my goal was pretty simple. It was to qualify for the Final 4. I think it was kind of a long shot at that point because I was, you know, it was kind of close, but I was behind many people. I was tied with Levon. Ironically, we both made it. And there were people like Ali Reza, who was clearly in a better position than me. Like, even if I got clear first place in Rapid and Blitz, I think I would basically be tied with Ali Reza. So, because he had played more events than me, but he had so many more points. And players like Prague, who had also probably a better score, and Maxime clearly was ahead of everyone. So it was really like I was trying to get that final spot because I thought probably three people will be ahead of me, but maybe I can snag the final fourth spot. So that was my goal. I got second in the St. Louis Rapid and Blitz, which I thought was a good start. You know, it was a bit disappointing because after the Rapid, I was in really good shape to get first, maybe. You know, if I'd beaten Gukesh in the final Rapid game, it would have been the best Rapid result in history of the Grand Chess Tour. But Blitz fell apart, unfortunately. But still, I got second. I mean, you know, looking, when I looked back at the tournament right after, I was like, okay, this is, considering my Blitz performance, this is actually a good result.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I even like gained a decent chunk of rating Rapid. So okay, my Blitz has been this year has been my worst Blitz year in my entire career. I have never played
in your
so
entire
badly.
Career. You would say
this year in every Blitz event I've played in, I've performed extremely poorly.
What's the cause for that? Have you thought about it? Have you gotten to, let's say, analyze and strategize ways to improve? And if you don't want to answer the question, obviously you don't have to.
I really don't know. But I mean, Blitz is also kind of, it's so finely balanced. It's like you just have to be alert at all times. So it's very easy for things to go wrong. It's just that they usually don't go wrong in every single tournament. It happens sometimes. But after the like World Blitz Championship, where I... In the preliminary stage, it was, yeah, I made the top eight. In the preliminary stage, it was very good. I even started 7 out of 7. Like, it was a very good start. After that 7 out of 7, everything has been bad. I mean, I don't know. I need to think about it a bit because Blitz does play an important role in a lot of tournaments, in the Rapid and Blitz tournaments, in the World Blitz Championship, in potential tie breaks and playoffs. It plays a role. So I'll need to think about it. Rapid has been like reasonable, you know, but Blitz, unfortunately, okay, it's actually only 2 events this year, so it's a very small sample size. But still, that's 36 games. It's like, you know, I've kind of grown accustomed to scoring a plus in every Blitz event over the last few years, and now I don't remember the last time I scored a minus before this year, and now I scored a minus twice in 2 events, so that was very disappointing. But then, okay, Sinkfield Cup, I still thought I'm in a much better situation than before the St. Louis Rapid Blitz. Sinkfield Cup, anyway, it was clear I should score better than Ali Reza. I should score better than Levon, although he was 3 points ahead. Or I just do anything better than Prague, and I'm always or equal to Prague, and if I'm equal or better than Prague, I'm always ahead of him. So the task was kind of like, it was, of course, unclear, but there were some certain things that I can kind of hope for. Like, I just do as well as Prague, which we actually shared first. Before the Blitz playoff with Wesley. I do the same as Wesley, for example, or I do better than Ali Reza. And actually, all of those things happened. I shared first with Prague. It was like 2 very important games. And then after I won those 2 games, after the fourth round, then I just slowed down. I kind of knew that I just need to draw the rest of my games, and I stopped taking risks. Basically under any circumstances. Some games I just shut down, some games I kind of played very safe, but from a point of view of winning the tournament, of course I should have taken a risk here or there, but I thought the Grand Chess Tour qualification is sort of the number one goal, and looking back, I think it's probably the right decision. It's not like I got any big winning chances after that. I didn't do anything, like I didn't mess up any wins. I just didn't really go for positions where I would get chances because that would also potentially give my opponent chances. Like I took chances against Noderbeck, you could say. It was very risky. I took chances against Ali Reza. I played a rather marginal opening, you could say, as well.
Yeah. A very original game against Ali Reza, approach. Yeah. With this
knight sideline
g3.
Yeah, exactly. A side, very small sideline of the Nimizo with bishop d2, knight f3, b6, bishop d2. Which he knew reasonably well, but then in the middle game he chose a few decisions were suboptimal. F5 to start with.
And I mean, generally, I think that was one of your best games of the year. I would say it was a very.
I think it was a good game.
Very well played.
I think it was overall a good game. Yeah. I mean, best played like in Norway. I actually played a lot of really high quality games. So, like my game against Arjun, my game against Wei Yi, both games against Wei Yi were very high quality. So, there were a few good games in Norway. But yeah, I'm happy with the win. It was a very critical game. It kind of shifted our fortunes because before that, Ali Reza was plus one. And after that, he had a very poor finish to the tournament. I mean, he lost, I think, remaining like two games after that. And he finished very poorly and he missed out. Even after that game, he still would have had reasonable chances to qualify. But the end of the tournament for him was very bad. And at some point, it became clear that it's probably going to be like the top four in the Grand Chess Tour will probably be Maxime for sure. I'll probably make it if I don't lose a game. Prague at some point won a game, which meant that he was in pretty much. And Levon looked like he just has to not lose, and he kind of coasted like me as well.
Yeah,
and to some extent like Prague, we just kind of coasted at the end. And Wesley, who had a huge comeback in the final three games, it still wasn't enough to qualify, but he did share first place, and then in the Blitz tiebreak, he played clearly the best, and he won the Blitz tiebreak and won the Singfield Cup.
Yeah, and it did seem like there were three very clear losers in this one, so if you want to look at it from that perspective. Obviously, Gukesh had a pretty bad result, especially for his expectations. Ali Reza, as you just mentioned, lost a bunch of rating points, 12 rating points, did not qualify, quite a bad result as well. But somewhat of a shocking result was Noderbeck, who lost like 23 rating points. I think this was perhaps his worst tournament of his career, at least since he breached 2700. But something happened in that one. You've had those type of results as well throughout your career. What do you think happened to Noderbeck?
Yeah, it happens from time to time. I mean, I had in Vikensay this year. You know, it's Vikensay, it's a bit longer, so it's you could get even more tilted, but it happens that you just get it, like something goes wrong at the start, then you're a bit unconfident. You don't get some luck in critical situations where maybe you could turn your tournament around with a bit of luck, but you just don't get it. And then you lose your confidence, you start to play poorly, and things fall apart. It's a bit of a mix of poor form, so you're just not playing very well, and also some circumstantial stuff. Although, he actually did get luck in some situations, like against Maxime. Mm. He was dead in the water. It was resignable, basically, and Maxime didn't win. He also beat Ali Reza in the very next round, I think. So he had like a little bit, but even with a little bit of fortune, his play was just in so many games so poor. But this does happen. I don't think it's really a knock on his career. It's just one of those. I mean, it shouldn't be. Like it's just one of those things where if he plays normally, he can regain the rating within a few months, you know. It can come and go very quickly, and yeah, it's just one of those events you kind of have to forget about. But yeah, it is definitely a sign for him that he should, you know, be a bit introspective about his play and what like some things have definitely gone wrong, which I think I've noticed a pattern. I mean, his tendency, I think, to have very good tournaments and then lose the last game. It's a pattern which has cropped up. Like I can, off the top of my head, name like the Tata Steel tournament 2 years, against Jordan in 23, and this year, not the last round, but the penultimate round against Arjun. And the US Chess Masters, he lost to Prague this year, and Prague ended up winning the tournament on tiebreaks, along with a three-way tiebreak, which seems to be a trend these days, a three-way tie,
yeah,
with Sindarov and Prague and Noderbeck. And he just had to draw with white. So if I could already name like three, four occasions when he's lost a critical last round game and not won a tournament, it's one of those things where he should probably fix that sooner rather than later. On the other hand, he's like 20. I mean, he's going to have a career.
Of course.
He's going to have a career for the next 20 years, maybe. So, like, I mean, a career at the very top, maybe for the next 20 years. So one tournament, I don't read too much into.
Absolutely. And he has such a fighting spirit. And I think he did mention that this is probably his worst, with a smile on his face, by the way. He did say that this is probably his worst tournament of his career. But these things can happen and occasionally do happen. And whenever they happen, you just need to bounce back. Like, you don't have any alternatives. You cannot allow yourself to fall into that tilt mode for too long. And it seems like he has a very positive attitude, and he knows that there's always a next event. But yet again, you don't want to have too many of this type of extremely poor performances, because that just hits your confidence so much.
Yeah, of course it's bad. Nobody's happy after a tournament like that. But I think from his, like, for me, a positive thing after a poor tournament is that you have other stuff coming up, so you don't have to dwell on it too much. Even when I...
Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free, at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
From the candidates, I had a very poor Vikings. I mean, -3, I lost like 20-something points. Just as bad as his tournament. But once you, if you see like a goal ahead, you kind of can easily forget that you just played like shit. And for him, it's actually a great time to forget about it, because if he actually looks at like the candidate's qualification, he has, I still think, 3 paths, which is more than you'd expect. One is obviously the World Cup. One is obviously the Grand Swiss. That's a path for everyone who plays those tournaments, which is everyone, I guess. But the other path is actually the FIDE circuit. I mean, I think it's a not unrealistic chance that Prague could qualify through either the World Cup or the Grand Swiss. It's not unrealistic. Maybe it's not
unrealistic. Yes.
It's possible. And then it goes to the second circuit spot, I think, which Noderbeck is actually in the best position of anyone. Because Prague has a lock on the circuit.
Right.
I think it's impossible to catch him.
That's the thing. And I do think that it's somewhat, not necessarily unreasonable, but I don't think, I mean, Prague is probably going to go to the candidates through the circuit. Sure, he has an extra chance, I guess.
He does play the Grand Swiss and the World Cup, though. So it's not, I mean, there's 5 spots there, and Prague is one of the hottest players of the year.
He is.
It's not at all impossible to imagine Prague qualifies through one of those methods. Unless, I mean, obviously Noderbeck could also qualify through one of those methods. But even if he doesn't, there is also the circuit. It's still in play. Like, I look at it and I think, okay, yeah, Prague, you know, he's going to be in the candidates one way or another, either mm-hmm. through circuit or mm-hmm. something else. But if it's through something else, other people can start to get ambitious, and Noderbeck actually is in the best position, because for some reason, nobody ever tries to do this method except for like, I mean, not even a handful of people. Like last year, it was three of us who actually tried to qualify, Arjun, Noderbeck, and myself. And this year, it's literally only one person who has...
Well, I see Anish, who's in second position right now. Prague, obviously, is absolutely killing it. But Anish has an extra event compared to Noderbeck.
I mean, Anish has to replace at the very least two of these events.
Yeah.
6 points and 11 points are nothing. Yeah. You have to replace those. So Noderbeck has the... Anish does have a higher top score. Sharjah Masters. So it is actually close because also Noderbeck probably needs to replace his Sharjah Masters. They have to start playing Opens too.
Yeah.
It's going to be funny because it's like, let's say Prague qualifies and then everyone else realizes they should have at least tried to get some Opens in during the year. Although Sharjah is an Open, right? So both Anish and Noderbeck technically only have to play one more Open event. And yeah. I don't see anyone else who is even trying. Like,
I don't know. Blumann is in fourth, a few points behind, but he has like...
Yeah, but every single one of his events is marginal.
Four events, yeah.
His top score is 15.7.
He's not qualified.
He's not. He's just played a bunch of events, but still has less points than Noderbeck.
Okay, Dark Horse, I'm seeing, could be Keimer. I see him in 10th right now, 40 points, only two events.
Yeah. He actually does if he finds events to play, because he has to, it's seven events, so he has to add five events to that. And it's September, it's not...
It's running out of months.
It's not May anymore, you know, it's...
Yeah.
But he actually has, like, he won the Chennai Masters tournament, so he has a really big top score, 24 points in one event. Anyway, yeah, it'll be interesting. I'm likely I could actually, like, I actually have a good score. Like, technically, if Prague qualifies, I would probably have the best chance if I tried to make it from the circuit.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, if I actually, like, I'd have to play five events as well. But, okay, that's obviously not very relevant.
Yeah, you're a bit ahead of, actually, Aravind also. Aravind is ahead of Keimer. Yeah, it's quite a funny cross.
Yeah, Aravind, actually, yeah, that's true. He could try to rack up some tournaments.
Everybody sort of gave up because of Prague. Just because he has such a lock-in on...
But this I don't understand, because like, if, let's say, some of these other players had tried to get more than two scores, it's only Prague only looks like he has a lock because he's played so many events and gotten so many points in so many events. But other players just haven't played very actively. So they only have like two qualifying events. On the other hand, like I haven't checked the regulations, but it says I only have two qualified events. But then I'm wondering, does that mean like my St. Louis Rapid and Blitz doesn't count? Is it because you can only have one from the same country, or like what's the? I'd have to check the regulations.
Could be,
because I don't know. Maybe it changed from last year.
Could be. But okay, yeah, for you, it doesn't really matter. Okay, let's finish, wrap it up with the Singfield Cup and the top four finals coming in Brazil. It's a format that encompasses all formats, all classical, rapid and blitz. And at the end of it, you get like semifinals, finals, and at the end of it, obviously, whoever scores the best wins it. Big matches. I think you are playing Levon. The pairings are already out, right? You're playing Levon in the first one.
That's correct.
So you're playing Levon. Prague is playing MVL, who, by the way, qualified without any concern. MVL seems to be enjoying the Grand Chess Tour quite a lot. He's always somewhere close to the top. It seems like Grand Chess Tour is one of those events that just simply... somewhat primes the experience of the players. Like, the experience of the players matters a lot. Time and time again, we see it throughout every year. What do you think of that?
I think it's also because like one of the advantages of the younger players is that they're more risk-taking in many ways, a lot of them. And if you take risks, you get more chances to win games and to potentially get high scores. But if you're just extremely stable, it's actually probably a better way to make it to the top four. Because, okay, top four, it's a lot of places. You don't need to win every event. So Maxime, he had a good like plus two in classical. I think he had just like a pretty good Poland event. Third place in St. Louis Rapid and Blitz, and that 50% was enough. It wasn't like he had.
He was always around the top, around the podium.
Yeah, if you're stable and have decent results, you just kind of make it.
Yeah,
you don't need to win every event. You don't need to get top two every event. You, like, if I had not had that really bad placement in Zagreb, I would have coasted like much easier, because I had a quite reasonable Bucharest, St. Louis events, and it was only because I had that one really bad one that I was on the fringe.
It feels like you're playing Levon quite a lot this year, and especially in this type of formats that combine classical, rapid, and blitz. You're going to do it again in Brazil. How do you see that one play out? How do you see yourself at the end of the event? Do you see yourself with the cup at the end of the event?
I mean, all I really know is that it's a very tough match. You know, regardless of the result, it's always very close with him. We had two matches in the American Cup this year. We've played matches before the American Cup multiple times. I think every single year.
Mm-hmm.
We've played in freestyle, you know, very long match once, which people can have a look at how long we were playing that day. We played a classical game, followed by two rapid, followed by two blitz, followed by one Armageddon. It was a long, long day. It kept going back and forth. So, you know, we have these very close matches, and he's been having a really good period from, let's say, from freestyle, or maybe even a bit before that. You know, that, but definitely from freestyle, which he won, and then St. Louis Rapid and Blitz he won, and plus one in the Sinkfield Cup. It's he's obviously in good shape. Like, I feel his strength more than last year or the year before. I feel like he's definitely playing better, which he's of course always been capable of playing even better than he is now, but it's you know, form goes up and down, so it's also normal. But he was definitely struggling if we look at 2023, especially in 2024. I think, you know, his play was shaky, and now it looks like he's been playing very consistently well in almost every event that he's played in. So, you know, I think the semifinal match will be just as hard as the final match if I make it through the semifinal. It's going to be equally hard whoever he would face. We're all kind of very evenly matched. I think it's a very close four-player event.
Absolutely. But of course, you're going there to win it. Levon, I think he said something very, very interesting during one of his interviews. They were asking him, obviously, you're having one of the best years of the recent years, not of your career, of course, because he's been one of the most winningest players in chess history. But he had a few soft years, and I think those soft years reminded him, you know, how much he enjoys the competitive aspect of chess. And he was mentioning that last year he didn't have a lot of events, and that really motivated him to do well. And it shows right now. He's training well. I think he's putting in much more work than perhaps he did in previous years, and it definitely shows in his results. And it's good to have Levon at the top again, because whenever he's in good shape, you know, the chess world, all of us enjoy it. So it's great to have him at the top. Now let's move on to the next subject, which is a bit more controversial, and that is the subject of Shevchenko, one of the highest profile over the board cheating cases ever. Shevchenko used to be a player that was very close to the 2700s, quite young, when he got caught cheating over the board in a team event in Spain. And the repercussions, I believe, were about 3-year ban. But nothing happened outside of that. Now, one of the commissions within FIDE obviously was the entity that gave this ban of 3 years. One of the commissions within FIDE, I don't remember exactly which one it was, but they decided to appeal FIDE's ban. And in the appeal, it got somewhat reversed. And by that, I mean he got stripped of his title. And this is the fourth grandmaster in history that got stripped of his title, definitely the highest rated. So quite a big event. Did you check it out?
I have to admit, the whole thing I kind of lost interest in after we knew he was cheating, which, I mean, obviously at the start it was a bit of a mystery. It was like such a bizarre story.
Yes.
Like hiding a notes in the bathroom, phones, another phone. It's just a weird story. And at the start, I couldn't understand how it was even possible. I thought it was some kind of hoax because, like, who puts notes in a bathroom? And all these things, it just didn't make sense to me. But then it was confirmed that it happened. There's no doubt about it that he did have a phone which got taken out of the bathroom and then brought another phone into the bathroom and left it there overnight because God knows why. And obviously I can't understand what was going on through his mind during this period. And then he said also that he didn't use it during the games, which I don't know what kind of... I mean, the behavior is already so irrational that I'm ready to believe that he was even more irrational by taking a cheating device and then not even cheating with it, which is even more crazy than cheating. Because then there's not even a point to it. There's not even an upside. But regardless of his state of mind or his reasoning, once it was clear that it happened, I just lost interest in the story. Because what is there to say? I mean, he was caught. He should serve a ban. And then after his ban is served, unfortunately, the truth is that, you know, tournament organizers are not going to have much interest in inviting him to tournaments because, unfortunately, you kind of damaged your integrity. And, like, why would anyone want to have that stigma around their tournament?
Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. At ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
When cheating is especially such a icky topic, like nobody wants to deal with the topic, right? It's not a fun topic, especially for an organizer. That would be the first thing that I would want to eliminate. I mean, just, you know, make sure nobody's talking about cheating because then it takes away from the entire event. At some point, I think they, you know, it felt like the ban, I think some people were criticizing it before that it was a bit too soft, and it seems like they kind of they made the punishment a bit harsher, which actually I think is fair in general to do, because, like, I think we kind of have to be hard on cheating, even if maybe the person never does it again. It's just, there should be a deterrent as well to anyone who's thinking about it. So, you know, taking away, the thing is, he was legitimately a strong grandmaster. So taking away his title, once he's able to return to chess, I'm pretty sure he'll be able to regain the title.
But that's a question. Are you able to regain the title?
I mean, for a player who was 20, you know, 650 or so.
Are you allowed to regain the title? Like to make the norms regain the title? Is that how it works now? Like
they basically took away his title.
Demoted, but you can earn it in the future.
Yeah, they took away his title, but they're not going to... I mean, yeah, it would be crazy to not let him get a new one.
Right.
In that case, just ban the guy forever. Like, what's the point of going through his weird, like, you can play, but you can't get a title.
Correct, yes.
I mean, especially because we kind of look at rating more than titles. Like, we have GMs who are 2,300. We have GMs who are 2,800. It's obviously GM means something, but it doesn't mean the same thing for everyone. There are a lot of GMs. It's a very wide range of levels. Like Magnus is a grandmaster, and I'm a grandmaster, and there are actually 1,900 grandmasters. The older players, of course, they deserve. They were grandmaster strength. Just obviously, their strength declined with age, but they keep the title. It's kind of a legacy title. So if the guy gets back to his former level of 2650 to 70, 80, whatever it was, kind of understand that he's a strong grandmaster. I also think even if he can't get back to that level, still he won't be so much weaker after a few years. He'll still be a 2600 player. So it won't be a challenge for him to get the performances necessary. I mean, also we do sometimes see players get norms with performances far above their rating. I mean, there was even a recent tournament where Tatev Abrahamian got a GM norm. I think she's around 2380 or so.
No, right now she's over 2400.
But I mean, before the tournament, she was
2340 something. She was 2346, I think. Yeah, and she gained like 60 something rating points. By the way, kudos to Tatev. Yeah, she went from 2340 to top 35. I think she's 35 in the world or 37 in the world, something like that.
She gained
top 50. Huge.
She gained like 60 something points.
Yeah.
2407. 64 points. I just checked.
So she was 2343 or something like that.
2343. That's right. And that's a 2650 performance. So, which obviously is huge for someone to perform several hundred points above their rating. Maybe it's her first norm. But in any case, it's he'll probably get the title again.
Yes. If you play at the 2600 level consistently, which he probably will, he's not going to be a 2670 rated player anymore. He's not going to have the strength being stripped from the chess world for so long, but he will still be around 2600. And if you play at that level consistently, you by default make the norms. Like there is no way to avoid making the norms.
Yeah, if you're a 2600 player, if you keep your rating, you get the norms, right?
That's it, basically. Yeah. Cool. So yeah, he's but obviously this is acting as a deterrent, right? And I think it's a strong deterrent, and I applaud what FIDE not really what they did initially, but the fact that it got reversed and they did ban, they did strip him off his title. I think this is quite important. It does act as a deterrent for future cases, which I'm sure we haven't seen the last of. But I think it's the right decision. I wish him all the best after he comes back. Obviously, it's going to be an uphill battle for him, but these type of cases have to be punished, I would say, swiftly. And He didn't get a lifetime ban, which maybe or maybe is not warranted. I don't know, depending on which angle you're viewing the situation from. But he got a 3-year. He's going to actually be able to play in 2026, at the end of 2026. So he's not even that bad. But yeah, stripping off his title, I think, sends a message to everybody.
Yeah, it's not super long, but it is symbolic. You know, it's obviously a bit it's a bit more of a symbolic thing than something that will maybe impact his career very directly.
Well, I mean, it kind of impacts his earnings, right? Because, for example, he cannot right now, in good faith, market himself as a grandmaster if he wants to teach. And teaching is obviously a very lucrative part of being a chess professional. He's unable to say, I'm a grandmaster right now. Well, obviously, he can say it, but it wouldn't be true. So, it does impact somewhat his career.
I mean, I know I'm like saying we should be hard on cheating, but I also don't think I wouldn't necessarily say it's a good thing that someone doesn't have opportunities to teach chess. Like, that's outside of the chess playing sphere, and still people need to make a living. So I wouldn't see an issue with someone who has cheated still, you know, making a living from chess coaching. Mm-hmm. But okay.
Which by the way, he is allowed to coach. Like, he will
there's
be
no
allowed.
Way to control that, no, right?
I mean, well, yes and no, but FIDE basically said that he's still allowed to work as a coach, as a private chess trainer. Or a coach.
I just don't know how they would ever control that if they didn't want to allow him. Just how could they control that? I mean, he could sell lessons online. They're not. What are they going to do?
Yeah.
But okay.
But he can also, let's say, not necessarily, because I don't know the legality of it, but he can, in good faith, still continue giving lessons. And even if he gets caught, like, there's no getting caught of that. Like, he's allowed to do that.
Sure.
But yeah. That was a big one, and obviously quite an unfortunate one. One of the highest profile cheating cases in chess history. All right. Next, new contender in the top 10. We have Vincent Keimer, who absolutely demolished pretty much the competition at Chennai Masters. He won the event with one round to spare. He's been putting very, very convincing performances. Only, I believe, 20 years of age, so still super young. Coming from a country that hasn't had a top player of his caliber in a very, very long time. And he definitely seems to be cementing himself at the top right now with very, very good performances. How would you rate his level right now? Are you impressed? Did you expect to see him in the top 10?
It's not a huge surprise. I mean, he's... Okay, the tournament was one of the best performances of the year. I think it was like, what, plus 5 that he scored?
Yeah.
Something kind of ridiculous?
Ridiculous, yeah.
He did also have a really big German Masters. Not German, I don't know what... German Championship. I don't know if they call it German Masters or German Championship.
German Championship,
but, yeah. The German National Championship. He also had a really big performance there.
He won freestyle
at the beginning. He won the freestyle, yeah. So it's been a very good year for him. I mean, Vikingsay was a bit rough, but outside of that, he's actually had a lot of really good performances. He's a player I don't have too much experience against. He's definitely very confident. From what I've observed, I felt like sometimes maybe a bit too sure of his own, you know, like that he's right about when he evaluates a position, which I felt like he's some, like when analyzing sometimes these freestyle positions, he felt like always very confident about the truth of the position, which I always feel like it's usually a very muddy thing. Mm. And when people are sure about an evaluation, I usually take that with a grain of salt. Like, I think there's rarely a clear answer.
Especially it's in good freestyle. To be
well, it just in general, like there's no, the more you analyze chess, the more you understand there's just no clear answer in any sort of complex position, especially in openings, because openings, there's so much flexibility. So you can basically approach it any way you want. On the other hand, it's good to be confident. Even if sometimes your confidence errors on the side of lacking objectivity to some extent.
I think it's much better to go on the overconfident side than the less confident side.
Yeah, it's definitely better to be more confident. But you know, with experience, I think you learn some things that the younger guys are still in the process of learning. One of those things is, I think that, you know, you can be mistaken, and things are rarely so clear cut. But that's a process of, I think it takes a while to learn that.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on his head with the confidence. This is something that I've observed from him as well. Obviously, he's a very classically trained player. I feel his style reflects that, and obviously his coach Peter Lecko is one of the more classical players in chess history. So definitely seems to be rubbing off on him. It's a welcomed addition to the top 10. And again, we haven't seen a player from Germany in a long time there. So he's spearheading, let's say, German chess right now. And it's cool to see. We'll keep an eye on him for sure. And last but not least, let's talk about Title Tuesday again. Proctor is here. I think yesterday, as we record this podcast, was the first time that Proctor was required of all the participants. Also, it went from two tournaments every Tuesday to only one tournament every Tuesday. You did not play, and you did tell Danny that if Proctor is required, you might not play. Are you going to play Title Tuesday in the future? Let's start with that big question.
I mean, I'll play at some point. Like, I'm just not going to change my life over it. You know, I wasn't playing Title Tuesday. I wasn't playing morning Title Tuesdays to start with in the past because I just have my morning routine, which involves waking up on the earliest side and going to the gym. And I just don't want to change my life over some internet chess for you know, usually a few hundred bucks or sometimes a thousand if everything goes perfectly.
Is the Premier
League very, very often for nothing? Yes. I did actually see some of the a few bits of the commentary, you know, as long as I could stomach, which was not very long. But they did keep saying the Premier League of Chess. I think in like 2 minutes, I heard the Premier League of Chess at least half a dozen times, which is kind of funny to me because it's the same tournament that's been going on for a decade. The only difference is that now they just eliminated half of them. And I think they added a sixth place prize of $100.
I think it's getting a bit more professionalized, like the whole aspect of the event, obviously with the reactions of the players, and we'll get into that as well because that's somewhat controversial also. But it does feel a bit more professional given that you have like an...
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Official, let's say, broadcast, perhaps.
Actually, there's a funny thing about that I will mention because
sure.
Many years ago, I was talking to Danny. And I was like, you know, why isn't there commentary for Title Tuesday? Why isn't there official? And he said, well, it's for the streamers. This is an event for also for the streamers to be able to build up their audience. And I thought, oh, that's actually very smart. And then I realized that actually it was one of their smartest moves when they were building chess.com was to basically get the streamers on their platform. And they facilitated a lot of the streamers getting on Twitch, getting, what's it called? Confirmed or verified.
Partnered, that's the word.
They facilitated a lot of that. Like I know because they...
No, this was huge. This was huge. The fact that...
When they tried to get me streaming, they got me partnered in like a day or two.
Yeah.
It was, I mean, it was a very fast process. I think they did that for many people and it just made it so much easier. And then everyone played on chess.com and they gave them, in many cases, a way to broadcast their events. So it was a sort of symbiotic relationship. So when you say that it's better now that they have an official broadcast, I think back to that time when they said their strategy was to make it a way for the players to broadcast. Which, from my point of view, I'm not a streamer, so it's not really something I consider directly. I'm not competing with other streamers or with the chess.com stream. It's just a change from what they said their goal was. So now maybe they have a different goal, which I'm curious what that is, because now the stream is on Take, which is...
Well, that's the professional. That's the professional stream. The stream that probably will have exclusive access to the cameras, and I guess that's it. That's the exclusivity of it. Obviously, you're still going to have Hikaru streaming his own games. We might stream some games. Other streamers are definitely going to stream their games as well. So that will continue. At the same time, obviously, this will be branded as the official stream. And unofficially, I would say Hikaru's stream was probably the official Title Tuesday stream up until this moment, you know. But it was not official.
Well, it was, and it continues to be the most watched stream. So the biggest one.
Yes.
Probably with about 5 times the viewers as chess.com, and maybe twice the viewers of someone like Danya, or if Magnus streams, maybe twice as much as Magnus even. But it's still there. It's now a kind of competition because there are people choose one or the other. Usually they usually don't, maybe they switch between them a bit, but for the most part, I think people stick to whatever they're watching, right? Whether it's Hikaru, Danya, Levy also streams, I think chess, you know, take. I am like curious what take is, because it wasn't really a chess.com thing. It was like Magnus's project. So now
the way I see it right now, so I think it was Magnus's project. It started as the app. The app, you could choose, let's say, the pieces of the players. I think this was the initial idea. You could basically bet how well the pieces of players in top events would do. To be honest, I never understood what that meant, and I never really got into the analysis of it. But that seemed to be the initial idea. And now the fact that they make it a consistent event every week with a lot of the top players, I think this is what their end game is. I think what they will want to do is basically include not betting, but how do they do it in football? Where, you know, like friends gather together and they basically have this app that they can choose the players that are going to perform.
Well, it's
the
like
best.
Fantasy football,
fantasy
but chess,
yes,
right?
Yes, this is the end game. This is what I feel the end game is. No pun intended.
But it's a bit different because players are people. So it's one thing to build a team, but
no, but nobody you would choose your players, like.
Yeah, but nobody has a connection. But nobody has a connection to chess pieces. Like, you know, maybe I really like, you know, this certain basketball player, or you like another one, and you build your team or American football or football or whatever.
I have no
connection.
You
don't care about building a chess set. I mean, I honestly don't think
that's going to last long. Like that idea with the chess pieces, betting on which chess piece is going to be the strongest, I don't think that's going to last long. I think if they want to do something similar to the Fantasy League, they would probably do it based on players.
Sure, like, but it's not a team event, so it's like you take certain players and you just bet on who will do well in an event. Okay, it's possible.
I guess, just betting, right? I see what you're saying. Yeah,
like you could just bet on players. It's not really the same as a creating a team.
You're betting on the players,
right?
Yeah, you're betting on players.
So okay, but the way I see it, they're trying to build a YouTube channel. Like they get good views on the videos they do.
Oh yeah, no, for sure, their YouTube is.
They're trying to build some sort of YouTube channel. I don't know. Maybe it'll be a very successful one. I don't know the business details between them and chess.com because it's like what's weird to me is that many years ago we had, we had Lee Chess, we still have Lee Chess, but we had these two other companies, Play Magnus Group, Chess24, of which Chess24 was a part, and chess.com. And then they merged, and then slowly all the Play Magnus Group companies kind of disappeared, like Chess24 as a site disappeared, and then their broadcast page, I think it's still up, but it's like they're, and you know, they got new in chess, and I think then they sold new in chess back. And ChessBomb just got deleted, and Follow Chess got deleted, and iChess.net, I think, got deleted, or became part of Chessable. And then Chessable kind of got integrated into Chess.com courses, but still exists, but now, it's a bit of a mix between Chess.com courses and
Chess. It's basically part of Chess.com, fully integrated into Chess.com.
So they got rid of all these companies, which some of which probably had good value. And then are they acquiring Take? Is that a part of Chess.com? This part is a bit confusing to me.
I don't think that's the case. I think they're just partnering with them, but...
But why would they want to do that? They have their own broadcast. Why would they want to not build their own Chess.com broadcast, which has been going on for many years and has
But wait a minute. I don't think they ever streamed officially Title Tuesday, did they?
But why wouldn't they want to stream it on their own then? It's their event. Why would they want to stream it on Take and not Chess.com?
Yeah,
good. This is the question which unless, like, why would they want to partner?
Okay, I have an answer for you. They just don't want to pay the expenses of running a stream every single week.
Yeah, it's one of my things that I started to realize is that Chess.com, they are trying to avoid any expenses. Like, we had the Champions Chess Tour, and you know, obviously this stuff has been going on a long time, but 2023, let's take 1 year, which was many different events. I think 5 events before the final. Mm-hmm. Maybe it was 6, but each event had a big prize fund. There were different divisions. The first place prize was 30,000. No, actually, maybe it was 40,000. Let me actually check to make sure I have the numbers right.
But the idea seems fairly obvious. Yeah, they just want to outsource the organization of it. Also, they want to outsource some expenses, which commentators every single week are not cheap, right? Like, you're still going to spend between $1,000 to $3,000 on commentators, depending who you get and how expensive they are. So,
yeah. Well, I mean, it depends, because you could, like, there's definitely people who, let's say they pay $100 an hour and it's a 1.5 hour or a 2 hour event, and they get 2 people, or they could do the really big podcast that they did with 3 commentators in a studio. Obviously, you don't need that, but if you want to make it like a really, nice looking production, then you could have that. Mm-hmm. Anyway, the numbers are Champions Chess Tour 2023, 30,000 first division 1, 10,000 division 2, 5,000 division 3, total 112,000 per event. And there were leaderboard prizes too, 25,000 first. And there were, 5 events plus, no, sorry, 6 events plus the final. It was a huge series of tournaments with actually like millions of dollars. And then in 2024, it became less events. And in 2025, it became 2 events with no second or third division, just with 1 division. And the Division had the same, or actually maybe less. But 30,000 first, but I think some of the prizes were less. So they slowly, like, basically removed all those events. And now it looks like they're removing more events. Like, now the qualification for the EWC is... Okay, I don't think they've said all the details yet.
So well, they have the Speed Chess Championship, which is going to be...
Yeah, that's already been there.
February, this used to be there. They obviously added Title Tuesday, which is the big, let's say, shift. And now they're bringing
the Speed Chess Championship. I just want to say, they did actually remove it because it happened every year. And this year it's not happening, right? Mm-hmm. So 1 year just got canceled. But okay, that's Speed Chess Championship is there... No, this year didn't happen. Nothing happened this year.
That was last year.
Oh, that was 2024. Before the Olympiad.
Everything is just like merging together. Yeah. So I guess so, they can delete 1 year. Yeah.
Okay. Bring it back. they'll bring it back next year.
Yes.
They have like a global championship. But they have it. I don't think they've said the details of what that is.
No.
Maybe it'll be as big as the Champions Chess Tour of 2023. Six events, huge prizes. Maybe they're going to do that. Although, considering that it's only three spots for the EWC, they're probably not going to make it a huge tour. Probably going to be like two events again. And then Title Tuesday just got cut in half, which it's a bit ironic to me. It's like you're saying we have this huge tour and this is the Premier League, but it's actually just a fraction of what they did 2 years ago. Like, literally everything was just cut. I mean, not everything. I'm exaggerating, obviously. But Title Tuesday was cut in half, just half the events, with a bit more money in each event. I think, like, 100 more sixth place, 100 more streamers prize, something like that. It's a few thousand less every week. I think it's probably about 100,000 less a year. So, I don't know, it's one thing to say Premier League, it's a marketing thing, but it's another thing to say, to use all these marketing terms and then to just cut things from beneath them.
I understand what you're saying.
Especially because it started as Chess24 had a series of tournaments called the Champions Chess Tour.
Yeah.
And Chess.com had the Global Chess Championship. A series of tournaments starting with the Rapid Chess Championship in 2022, ending with the final in Toronto. And then that all merged, and then just everything turned into like two events. They managed to take like 15 events and turn it into two, just like wiping out several million dollars from their prize fund. That's the way I see it.
That's how stock goes up. You cut expenses. That's the way it goes.
To me, it's actually, I see it a different way. I just see it as they got sponsorships for those events, and now they were unable to acquire those same sponsorships. Because I
could be
okay. Again, some of those sponsorships, like I think it's a fair speculation. I mean, we know that there were sponsorships. There was things like they were all called events like Chessable Masters, Air Things Masters. AIM Chess Rapid, Julius Baer. I don't know. That's also some kind of company, I think.
Yes.
When it was Chess24, it was like, well, actually, it was this crypto thing which collapsed. But you remember this?
The SBF thing.
What was it?
Yeah.
What was it called?
Oh, man. I should know that. SBF, Sam Bankman-Fried.
FTX
crypto FTX, cop. There it is. FTX. Yes.
Yeah.
Of course.
Which
those guys were investing so much money in sports. They invested a little bit in chess, but those guys were buying arenas. I think they bought the Miami basketball team arena for like 10 years or something like that, just to name it FTX Arena. And I don't know what happened to that after it collapsed.
Well,
it's probably back to the original.
A lot of people's money went out the window, I think, as well.
Yep.
Unfortunately. But I mean, clearly this money was coming from sponsorships. That's how it normally happens to chess, you know. So that's why when I watched the commentary and I kept hearing Premier League of Chess, I just got a bit like, you know, like let's back it up a bit with some events, not.
Are you allowed to play shirtless?
I don't know. Probably not.
Well, they broadcast it. This is part of the discussion, right? So I think Anish mentioned it that basically what they're doing is commercializing the players' likeness, I guess, the players' cameras, and they get to use it during the official broadcast. They can basically follow any single player because everybody is forced to use Proctor, which is two cameras and an app. That chess.com. I was a bit surprised, by the way, because we did have a discussion with Danny, and he did say that Proctor, the app, runs a bit slow right now. And he did say that in the future, they will try to make it better. I did not expect the future to come so soon. But they did start using that. Some players are still complaining about the performance of the app.
Who was complaining? Because I haven't followed, and I didn't play, so I can't speak on it directly.
Well, I think Hans for once.
Hans, okay.
Oh, yeah, on Twitter, yeah.
Let's have a look at Hans' Twitter.
I guess that's a good place to start. The usual suspects, I guess, were complaining.
The anti chess mafia.
Mm-hmm. Yes. The anti chess mafia.
I don't see. Maybe I'm missing it.
I thought I saw it. Let's see. We're going to Hans's.
Nothing in the last, because it was yesterday, right? Nothing in the last.
No. Not the last one. I think this was before the Proctor was officially played with, which was yesterday.
Okay.
I think it was the previous week.
Yeah.
I don't know if he.
For all I know, it runs great. I'm not gonna.
You've tried.
I'm not going to say no. For all I know, I mean, I haven't, so I can't criticize them, unfortunately, on this one.
Are we streaming it next week?
I don't know.
Are we going to make this?
I've also put myself in this position that
Proctor?
Yes. It's like if I play now they're going to.
It's okay. It's okay.
Hikaru's going to make another video.
That's okay. We'll respond to it.
But look, I'm, you know, if they get their measures under control, which I don't know if they will or can, well, let's just say they do, you know, I'm not against, I do think one nice change is that it's 5 minutes, no increment instead of 3-1.
You like that?
Look, I think 3-1 was a complete disaster of a time control. I don't know who came up with that idea. The issue is that, like, in 5-0, you know that it's flagging is part of it. It's part of the game. Everyone knows it. Everyone's on equal terms. With 3-1, it's like flagging shouldn't be part of the game, but most people at some point flag because their connection drops out a little bit. Or they, you know, I don't know exactly what reasons people have. You know, maybe they just, their mouse screws around for a second or two. But I've always said, like, a lot of these events, if you actually pay attention, they get down to some flagging, which in 5-0 feels natural, in 3-1 just feels like an accident. So I'd rather we have the, like, let's just go all in, let's not half-ass it. We'll play normal blitz where you flag people. And online it at least makes sense because you can pre-move. In 3-1 you can't even pre-move. It's, for the most part, it feels unnatural to pre-move. You know, if you like, if you just go to some of the past events, like I was watching some of the games from like one Freestyle Friday. I think Hikaru was playing Aravind. And it's basically like an unclear end game. I think it's probably a draw. Maybe Aravind is better at some point. But Aravind's always going down to his last like 1.5 seconds and barely making it. And Hikaru just like plays very fast and keeps around 15 seconds. And I think he just understands that at some point Aravind is going to flag, mm-hmm. which of course happens. Probably Aravind's connection isn't very good as well. And it just feels like some sort of accident. I'd prefer we have the normal 5-0 or 3-0. They could also do 3-0. and people just flagging in a natural way. So I like that change. It makes me more tempted to play, actually, with the new time control. If it was 3-1, I actually think, like, Hikaru said he preferred 3-1, although he gave a reason, which was...
No. Well, he said he prefers, I think, 3-1, but he believes that he's much more of a favorite in 5-0.
Which is one of those slightly enigmatic Hikaru statements. I don't know what the goal is. Obviously, if he's better at no increment, then he prefers no increment. That's that just stands to reason. But I think he did say that.
Well, I think he was pointing to the fact that perhaps without increment, you will get much more hurt, for example, if you lag at all. Like, you're never going to
be able to beat that. I don't think that's true at all. If you lag in 3-1, you also flag. It's not like 1 second like it gives you anything.
If you have a bad connection, let's say for... Yeah, I guess. I don't know. I don't know exactly what...
It's only if you happen to lag at the start of a 3-1 game and you like lose a minute.
Yeah.
It's not the end of the world.
By the way, I found the Hans tweet. Proctor Clown Show gets even worse. This was August 22nd. Lag is unbearable. That's just like... A week ago, I guess, a couple of weeks ago. Not sure I will continue playing if it continues. And of course, he responds to his own tweet. I will obviously continue because the Chess Mafia must be held to account. But maybe I need Starlink Wi-Fi to prevent insane lag.
Okay, Hans.
So the Chess Mafia has to be stopped. Or held to account.
Never mind.
All right. I guess we can leave it at that, unless you have anything else to...
I continue my crusade week after week saying... But I think my criticism is fair. They kind of... Unfortunately, I think they destroyed a lot of the infrastructure of the online chess sphere. There used to be a lot of events. Now I'm going to take the cheating part out of it because that's going to start arguments, but let's just say that that's not an issue. We had a lot of events. And there was money. There was a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
And the money has actually just been cut into like tiny, tiny pieces.
Dried up. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, it just dried up. And I think basically Magnus and Hikaru don't say anything because like they're kind of contractually tied to chess.com. So I don't know. I mean, I really can't imagine that they're so thrilled about the fact that like the money has just been cut to a fifth of what it was.
Hmm.
That doesn't seem, especially if you like online chess. If you don't, then maybe you don't care too much. But if you like it, then why would you be happy about everything, all the money just going down the drain?
Yeah, completely, completely understood. Obviously, I want to see you play. I think a lot of people want to see you play. I want to see all the top players play in the event. And maybe if that's the case, and if you do get to play, if you decide to play, maybe we'll stream it as well. Will become the...
Well, I'm curious about their global championship. So when they release details about their global championship,
There's nothing there.
They just said that there will be something.
Yeah.
Like in the state of chess.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
There's the Title Tuesday updates. And then they have this graphic, which is for the Esports World Cup, right? So obviously the Esports World Cup interests a lot of players because a lot of players are signed with teams, including me. I'm playing for Team Liquid. And we want to, you know, be able to participate and do well for our team. That's that's kind of the point, right?
Yeah.
So then I look at this graphic. It says Speed Chess Championship, 3 players qualify. Title Tuesday split into 3 different periods. and six players qualify. And then the global championship, three players qualify. That runs from March to May. So if it runs from March to May, then my assumption is that it's not one event, because one event doesn't take 2 months. It's probably two events, right?
Yes.
I don't think they can fit three events.
At least two.
Also, that time period is pretty rough, because it's that's candidates. The candidate.
Yeah, candidates.
And a lot of top players will play candidates.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously, normally everyone who plays candidates is a top player. And it's become increasingly clear that Prague and Hikaru will most likely qualify. And okay. But maybe they'll figure out that time period. But I'm curious what the chess.com global championship is. It's probably rapid, because otherwise they already have two different Blitz events. They would probably not create a third Blitz event, right?
Mm-hmm.
They would just put like three more spots from the speeches championship or something like that. So I would assume it's rapid, maybe 10-0. But the details are for now a mystery to us.
And before we close the show, I think it's a good idea to congratulate the new Louisiana State champion, Hikaru, who...
No, but he's not, because he can't be.
Why can't he be?
Well, the Louisiana State champion has to be from Louisiana. So he won the tournament, but the champion is...
Do you?
Whoever got second place.
Do you? I became state champion in California quite a couple of times, and I was not... I was not representing California, though I was living in California briefly, but
I think,
what's your take on Hikaru's Mickey Mouse tournaments? Are you supportive of that, or do you not have too many thoughts about it? To be honest, it seems kind of like a fake outrage. I think Hikaru sort of telegraphed that he's going to participate in some Mickey Mouse events for quite a while. There does seem to be some drama attached to it.
Well, look,
and he is not the state chess champion. He's the honorary 2025 Louisiana state champion.
So who's the actual champion?
I don't know. I have no idea.
It's important.
Oh, the real Louisiana state champion is FIDE Master Nick Matta.
Nicholas Matta. Okay.
Nick Matta.
Congratulations, Nicholas Matta.
Congrats.
Wait, I mean, it's a state championship. It's a good accomplishment.
It's a big one. It's a big one.
You know, even some top players are participating and being able to win the title.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's huge for local chess. I mean, imagine playing the state championship in Louisiana, and generally you're expecting to see some 2200s at best, and then Hikaru shows up out of nowhere. And he actually plays the whole tournament. You would expect him to maybe play four or five games and then withdraw and keep his
games. No, but he's there to get games. He's there to get the games.
He needs to get as many games as possible, right? But he also needs to maintain and not risk his rating, right? So if he was going to play like a 2500, 2600, I have a feeling he would have stopped after like 3-4 games.
No, I don't think it's about risking his rating so much, because his average...
You think he's pretty...
He already has 2 months average ahead
of... Pretty far ahead, yeah?
Yeah, even if he lost like 50 points tomorrow, he would probably still be a favorite to qualify. Which is impossible to lose so much rating.
And, yeah, of course.
And even if he played some 2500, 2600, he would still be a massive favorite to win those games as well. So I think it's just he doesn't want to expend any energy into it. He just wants to... I mean, he wants to have a sure thing, which is these games... Basically, he was at like 99% or higher to win every single game. Maybe against like the 2200 plus, it's like 97%. I don't know. I don't know the math. It's not 100% to beat 2200s, but it's pretty close there for a 2800 player. Mm. So I think he was just like doing the bare minimum effort to collect his games. Similar to what Ding did, which I think it's better now, because those events that Ding played were kind of fishy, and this is a real event. I mean, he's, you know, he showed up to a real event.
Yes.
It wasn't organized on his behalf. It's still like something that should be avoided. Obviously, the system should, this should not be the system. Like, if you have an activity requirement, they should make it so that you have to, I don't know, have an average minimum rating of who you're playing against. Because otherwise, it's just too easy to game the system. Which is what this is. It's just finding the easiest path forward and the most kind of risk-free path forward. In Hikaru's case, he's also had such consistent results over the past few years that to have him as the rating qualification, the rating qualifier, feels quite natural. Feels pretty natural. But the system shouldn't be set up in this way. And the only reason I don't really care to say so much about it now is because, you know, 3 years ago, the complaints about Ding's qualification were clear. 2 years ago, when Alireza was playing the event, FIDE actually canceled one of his events because they didn't think it met the requirements. So obviously that system wasn't good either. And I still think that the system is not good. I mean, they've changed some things. They've made it an average rather than one list. That is an improvement. On the other hand, because you can just, like, if you have a lead, then you can just sit on it and then stack up a bunch of games where you don't really risk to lose rating. You can basically ensure a spot if you start with a rating lead when they start counting the rating, which I think was like June or something. I don't know exactly which month. Ironically, if I had like not played Viking Zay, we would probably be about the same rating. and then by some weird quirk, even though I already qualified, still my rating would take, like if I was higher average, my rating would take away his spot. But that's obviously not the situation now. So Hikaru, I think, is, if he plays the games, which maybe it's like 18 more games he has to play, still quite a few, but I assume since he's already played this event, he's going to try to get them in. He's a shoo-in for the candidates. It's like it's like a 99%,
yeah,
close to 100.
It feels like right now we have you, Hikaru, and Prague very likely. Obviously, you were assured you're already qualified, but Hikaru and Prague seems to be the next ones in line. Fabi?
And in 2 weeks, we'll find out two other players.
Right. Grand Swiss is happening. Obviously, that's a big one. And we'll be following that as well. Do you have any predictions for that? Obviously,
you know, you're not going
to be able to accurately. Oh, you can try to accurately predict it, but nobody knows it's such a balanced event, right? But who do you think has
the kind of the hardest one to predict because it's an open with so many players. Like last time, it was Vidit who won the tournament.
Yep.
And Hikaru got second. Which was a surprise. And Hikaru got second. It was a surprise. I think for most people.
Huge although surprise, yes.
Well, certainly Vidit is a player who can win. You know what? I'll say Noderbeck.
Noderbeck, okay, coming off that disastrous Singfield Cup, that's a big one. Okay, I like it. I like it.
And let me see.
Give me one more. We have the pairings, by the way.
Yeah, I saw. And I'll say Fedosev.
Fedosev. That's a name I did not expect to come.
I mean, yeah, okay. It's probably not the most obvious choice, but
I like it. I like it.
Not the craziest one either.
It's a good one. Okay, let me see.
Keep in mind, Gukesh is playing, and if he wins, or gets second, then obviously it goes to third place, right?
Yep.
I assume that's how it works.
Yep. That's my guess too. All right. I'm going to go a bit risky on this one. I'm going to go with Alireza and Hans.
I mean, you're just picking Hans because people will talk about it, right?
Not necessarily. No, I think he has a good chance.
Of course he has a chance, but a good chance.
He's higher rated than Fedosev.
By 2 points.
Yes.
Let's keep it real also.
I mean, just as big of a wild horse.
He's a good player. He's capable of winning or getting second.
Yes.
But he doesn't, I don't know. Does he have a style that can rack up a lot of wins in open? Maybe. Alireza is a very, very logical choice.
Yes.
Alireza is super logical. I mean, he's already won this event.
He has.
Four years ago, to be fair, but he has won this event.
He was very close to winning it if you wouldn't have stopped him also a couple of years back.
Wait, when?
When was it when you guys were top of the field? Was it in...
That was when he won it. I beat him, but he still won the tournament.
Oh, that was it. Okay.
Yeah, I beat him, but he won the tournament.
Okay. That's my bad.
Last time he played, he actually lost to Hans, I think. Am I getting this right? Hans definitely beat...
Hans beat the Rapport.
Richie, yeah.
Yes.
Didn't he... Oh, no, Alireza lost to Sevian. That's who it was.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It was...
Hans
did... Well, anyway, Alireza didn't have a great tournament last time.
I mean, it's possible. It's possible. I'm not counting him out.
Of course, it's possible.
Yes, Alireza and Hans, those are my two picks. Don't try to take them away from me.
I wouldn't be shocked by Jan either. The guy has had a lot of time to prepare. He's a very well-prepared player. He's very dangerous with preparation. He's very good at putting pressure on people, especially people who are a bit scared of him.
He did win Aeroflot Open, which is not similar in terms of strength. A level below, but still quite a strong event.
It had Hans.
It did have Hans, yes. Good point. All right.
I wouldn't be shocked by that either. Just putting that out there.
I think anybody can win this one. Obviously not anybody, but from the top 10, it's, you know.
Well, yeah.
Top 10, at least top 15, anybody can win it. Cool. Fabi, as always.
It'll be a fun tournament.
It will be a fun
tournament
to follow for sure. And we're going to see a lot of very interesting discussions, theoretical discussions in this one. So looking forward to it, Fabi. Good chatting with you. Congrats on qualifying for the top four in Brazil. That one was a big one. And that's all from us for this week. Guys, as usual, don't forget, like, subscribe, and all the good stuff. And we'll be seeing you once again next week, most likely. Cheers.